The regular season is heating up, new stars are emerging, and that means more opportunities to win up to 25 times your cash on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection on a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's that easy. Let it fly to turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Watch your favorite players and get paid doing it this basketball season. See your entries make progress during the game or make new entries for the second half and the fourth quarter. Three-pointers, assists, rebounds, and everything in between are yours for the taking. Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit of up to $100. Just download the Prize Picks app and use code GET100. That's code GET100 on Prize Picks for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Talk about the ultimate put-down song from Lennon.
It's a murder ballad.
Yeah, really. You know, just incredible that this is the same guy that 7 years later would be, you know, singing songs alluding to basically women's lib and equality and end his, you know, career with woman.
There was plenty of atoning he had to do.
Yeah.
And you know, the public rhetoric is one thing, of course.
Mm.
So give him whatever credit may be due for that. But, in terms of advancing the content of his lyrics.
But I mean, you know, that song Run For Your Life from Rubber Soul, it's quite amazing because he referred to it as just a throwaway song, just to, as he would put it, get on the album.
One he particularly expressed a lot of regret over, like song he wished he'd never written.
Right, he'd ripped off the line from Baby Let's Play House.
Yeah, fair enough.
Rather see you dead, little girl, than to be with another man.
Good thing Morris Levy didn't own that.
But boy, does he run with that, right? You know, the part for me that's really the most kind of chilling is where he says, "Let this be a sermon. I mean everything I've said. Baby, I'm determined and I'd, rather see you dead.
He's really doubling down on the sentiment there.
Yeah, and when he says, I'd rather see you dead, it's really with a kind of withering tone in his
voice. Yeah, there's a vehemence to that, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to make the focus of this show sort of the romantic content of the Beatles' lyrics, such as it is. You know, we're coming off the Valentine's Day holiday, and just the thought of, you know, the Beatles are known for, when you look at the body of their work, you know, I think people have broken it down that the vast majority of their songs concern themselves with love.
Right.
You know, it's this big abstract.
McCartney now, said that in Anthology, didn't he?
Yeah,
that, you
know, and it's true.
Yeah.
And, you know, what a great thing to be known for.
Yes.
You know, we wrote love songs. We put something positive into the world.
However,
upon closer examination,
you
can break down their songs to, you know, whether they're positive romantic love, and certainly there are those that are as good as that have ever been written, and then there are, you know, boy loses girl themes, and then there are things like Run for Your Life,
one's about personal insecurity as well.
There is a ton that is revealed about their own inner lives.
Yes,
when you really look at this, and I don't want to, you know, let's say from the onset here, that we're not here to hold everything up to this critical lens, you know, everything's got to be politically correct, and if they say something misogynistic, which is certainly rampant throughout the course of their lyrics, that we should be taking them to task for it. We're talking rock and roll here.
Yeah,
but if you don't have misogyny in rock and roll lyrics, then what do you got? You know, that away.
Right, but I don't know. When you say it's sort of like rampant, the misogyny, I'm not so sure. I mean, compared to today, with some of the, you know, the songs and some of the lyrics.
No, we're
there,
comparing it to the context of the times.
Right.
You know, when people were singing about Mrs. Brown's lovely daughter. And,
well, but the Stones were, you know.
Well, I mean, that was their thing, though. And don't you really see that as a reaction to the perceived romanticism about the Beatles? I mean,
possibly.
Every Beatle hit single was extolling love. You know, I feel fine, can't buy me love, I want to hold your hand, you know, all that stuff. You know, it wasn't until mid-period, you know, Yesterday, a broken romance song was a number one hit, and then they start, you know, completely deviating off script, you know, Nowhere Man in America and Paperback Writer.
But, I mean, you know, the Beatles weren't really that reactive. They were more proactive, okay? You know, they led the way.
Right. So I'm saying the Stones reacted to them.
Right. But, you know, but you got the Stones with things like Under My Thumb.
Sure.
Which, boy, I mean, that kind of
competes
with Run
for Your Life.
Mick
has always said that was sort of like an overstatement caricature.
Mm.
Although, you know, in a song where you compare a woman to a pet and a cat. And,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
it might be taking things a little far, but
yeah,
I think
I don't want to overanalyze here. You
no,
know, oh my God, the Beatles were major misogynists. They were of their time. They were, you know, from, you know, Liverpool and a certain attitude, but it wasn't an attitude that was as reviled then as it is now.
No, of course not. And this is rock and roll. You know, a lot of it is, you know, playing the bad boy, or, you know, it's a caricature of romance.
I don't think they overplayed that, though.
No, I don't think so. But I think where they did, in their own heads at least, cross the line. And we've got plenty of examples where they express regret. You know, John talking about Run for Your Life.
Yes.
You know, and his also admission later on when he helped Paul with Getting Better on Pepper.
Yes.
You know, him sticking something straight from his own life. I used to be cruel to my woman. I beat her.
Right.
You know, that's something completely revealing, as he admitted. He wasn't just pulling that out of the air.
Right.
But then you look at other things they did. It seems to me, just as an overall perception, when they're writing about sweet romantic love, you know, they do that with, you know, as the finest of craftsmen working, you know, a here, there, and everywhere. I mean, even going back to day one, P.S. I Love You, you know, Love Me Do, a hit single that's got exactly one verse and a bridge, it just, you know, hammered into the ground, as it were. But it's, you know, Please Love Me is the theme of that.
The thing is, that's fantastic, is, you know, the Beatles always had backbone, okay? And as we're going to point out, some of the lyrics were less than, you know, pleasant, but that said, boy, did they know how to write a sweet love song as well.
They did.
In that era as well, of the boy loses girl and blue moon in June type love songs.
Yes.
They wrote some absolutely beautiful
and
songs.
And that's really how it should be judged, is by the sound. You know, you can get nitpicky about, oh, you know, that's not grammatically correct, or, you know, he's being unwittingly revealing in some of the ambiguity that's out there.
Yeah.
But you know, we don't want to belabor this as, you know, just real hardcore rock criticism, because it is rock and roll. It's right. meant to scan well. It's meant to be the whole package. It's not meant to be lyrics divorced from the music.
Yeah.
I mean, that is what makes so much of this work, is the overall sound of it. But just for the purposes of discussion, you know, we're going to get a little nitpicky, because yeah. I think there are plenty of revealing things that come out through their lyrics that completely reflect not only their inner lives, but maybe sort of their attitudes towards romantic love.
Yes.
And the bigger point I was going to make is that when they are speaking of romantic love, the actual love ballads, you know, the Here, There, and Everywhere, things like that,
yeah.
you know, top-notch stuff, but a lot more general than the great detail they go into when it's the downside of love.
Yes.
Where they really get into it when they're talking about something that's a much more negative thing.
Right.
You know, something threatening.
Yeah.
You know, something with implied violence.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, it can get more explicit than Run for Your Life.
But, you know, I love the fact that obviously, you know, we had through the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, you know, there'd been songs with either sexual innuendo or ones that came straight to the point.
Yes.
Certainly in the R&B field.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the Beatles were well aware of that and very influenced by that. But I love the fact that, you know, their first single, as you said, is Love, Love Me Do, You Know I Love You. But the second single, Please, Please Me, mm-hmm. is about sexual frustration on the part of the guy.
Yeah.
You know, the lyrics, you don't need me to show the way, love. Why do I always have to say love? Come on, come on, come on, come on. Please, please me like I please you.
Yes.
Amazing lyrics.
There's some reciprocity there.
Yeah.
Which it was quite refreshing.
Yes.
You know, yeah. For its time, where, I mean, my God, you see some of the stuff that was in the charts.
Right.
Yeah, I think of Lou Christie, Lightning Strikes.
Oh, boy.
Man, talk yeah. about a song that is like so yeah. you know, un-PC. I mean, it's basically, I'm going to have license to do whatever the hell I want.
Mm-hmm.
You just wait for me till I get it out of my system.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. what a, it's a great record. You know, whether, you know, one, you know, aspires to its.
That was like, what, 69, wasn't it? Like,
oh, 65.
Oh, 65? Was
yeah,
it
69 was I'm going to Make You Mine.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
He was managed by Stan Polley, by the way. Did wow. you know that? The infamous?
For his sins, yeah.
Yeah, the guy who buried Pete Ham. Yes. Pete him. But that's another topic.
Mm. But anyway, on that first album,
yes.
another, you know, great line really is, you know, in Paul's song, I Saw Her Standing There, where she was just 17, you know what I mean.
That was John's contribution.
Was it?
Yes. Okay. Paul originally had something like No Teenage Queen or something like
that.
Oh,
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is
just Teenage
horrible.
Queen. Yeah, you're right. right. You're right. Look, there you go. You see, I wasn't kind of using that to capitalize on Lennon.
No. You're unwitting. Yeah. You stumble into these compliments and extolling
Yeah, because there's one around every corner with
yeah,
Lennon.
Yeah, right.
You see. But, yeah, but no, but that is true. But you know what a line, eh? You know, instead of a teenage queen, you know what I mean.
Which
changes everything.
Wonderful line.
Fantastic.
It's so perfect.
Yeah.
And that it was Lennon's real gift to the Beatles. Is you know, because he was so steeped in wordplay.
Mm.
That was the way his mind worked. You know, he's very literary.
Yeah.
You know, he loved puns. He loved double entendre.
Mm.
And it's a great, great line.
Well,
it's
actually,
so worthy of Chuck Berry.
Well, actually, you know, Please Please Me, he actually said that there was a Bing Crosby song, Please Listen to My Please.
Right.
And he loved that double use of the word please.
Or please without the E at the end.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So he's always aware of that, always cognizant
yeah,
of that.
And I think he the way his mind worked, if he saw the word on the written page, he could get more meaning out of it than just simply singing it.
Yeah.
You know, the way those two words look next to each other.
But the wonderful thing with the Beatles also is, you know, they composed their own songs, and boy, did they convey the meaning. You know, and Please Please Me, that, you know, the ascending, you know, sort of crescendo of the song,
mm-hmm.
it's really orgasmic, isn't it? I mean,
he's
begging and he's building up. And,
right.
You know, you feel the tension. And, you know,
the
folks,
come on parts.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people may listen to, you know, to us saying this and think, oh, come on, you know, you're going a bit over the top. But it's not. It works on a subliminal level.
Absolutely.
It does reach the listener. You know, people
you
are
never convince
the
girls didn't know exactly what they were getting at with
right.
that. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
And I think guys, you know, not that they were, you know, reacting sexually to the Beatles, but they got that excitement. They identified with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a song like that, where it is basically pure implicit sex.
Yes.
You know, that's straight out of the blues tradition.
Yeah.
And it was far from the only sexual metaphor the Beatles would use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hard Day's Night is pretty straightforward. I'm going to go out and make all this money for you, babe, because I'm going to get my reward once I get home.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
That's as Absolutely. And there's no other way to reduce it to anything more than that.
Correct.
It's pure sexual drive.
Yeah, we do get that dynamic in their songs of, you know, in some of their songs anyway, of the guy being the breadwinner.
Yes.
He basically kind of makes the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And we know what he expects in return as well.
Yeah. And this sort of understanding as a male that you must fulfill certain things in order to get what you want.
Right.
And when Paul sings, and she's a woman, my love, don't give me presents.
I know that she's no peasant.
Yes. It's all like turning it on its head.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, she's the one bringing things to him.
Right. And even in a song like Girl, you know, on Rubber Soul, where, you know, John later said it was most likely about the kind of girl they were all dreaming of. And, you know, and in his case, it turned out to be Yoko.
Well, yeah.
but, you know, the verse
wasn't saying that in 1965.
Right. Well, exactly.
As far as a depiction of someone desired, you know, the girl in question doesn't come off too well.
Well, but she's intriguing. I think that's what is turning him on, is that she's intriguing. She's, you know, she's not just sweet and
she's not
a doormat.
Sweet at all.
You know, she's not a doormat. You know, but she's got a charm to her. It's something that intrigues
There's
him.
An intrigue to it. But
yeah,
I mean, she
and
puts you down when friends are there.
Yeah.
Who the hell wants that?
Right, right, right.
Makes you feel a fool. The whole, a man must break his back to earn his day of leisure.
I was going to say that verse. Was she told when she was young that pain would lead to pleasure? Now, he, put that in line with like Christianity. But I mean, there's a sexual connotation there that's obvious.
Absolutely.
And then he follows up with, did she understand it when they said that a man must break his back to earn his day of leisure? So here's the poor guy, you know, slogging his guts out
for this
woman. Yeah, killing himself for her. Will she still believe it when he's dead? I mean, the cynicism in a guy who at the time was like, 24 years old when he wrote that?
Yes.
Amazing.
Is there anybody going to listen to my story? All about the girl who came to stay. She's the kind of girl you want so much it makes you sorry. Still you don't regret a single day. Ah, girl. Girl, girl. When I think of all the times I've tried so hard to leave her, she will turn to me and start to cry. And she promises the earth to me, and I believe her. After all this time, I don't know why. Ah, girl. Girl, girl. She's the kind of girl who puts you down when friends are there, you feel a fool. Say she's looking good, she acts as if it's understood, she's cool. Ooh, 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 girl. Girl, girl. Was she told when she was young that pain would lead to pleasure? Did she understand it when they said that a man must break his back to earn his day of leisure? Will she still believe it when he's dead? Oh, girl. Girl, girl.
That's the thing about a lot of Lennon's lyrics, especially in the first half of the Beatles' career. There's such an insight and sophistication and ambiguity to so much of what he writes about.
Yes.
I mean, as far as straightforward love, you know, you could probably count on one hand. You know, Ask Me Why being a brilliant love song from him.
Yeah.
And where he's basically talking about, you know, now he's connecting and finding this fulfillment. But if he comes off as sad, it's because he's never had true love before.
Right, right.
Which is a very adolescent idealization of romantic love.
Mm.
But you know, the song is so pure. There's no, you know, dark corners really to that song,
right,
other than, you know, he's been lonely and now he's getting fulfillment.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great, great, joyous love song.
Right. On the 1971, well, it was filmed in 1971, you know, The Making of Imagine, the album, and it's since been released as Give Me Some Truth.
Yeah.
And it comes with a sort of bonus feature, which is a 30-minute interview at Tittenhurst Park,
yeah,
Ascot, in 1971 with John and Yoko, done by a female English journalist. And some of the quotes in there, I think, are quite revealing that, you know, I picked up from there. These are all from John. One is, the songs were always about love and a boy-girl relationship, but they just happened to miss out the most important thing, which was sex.
He's saying this?
Yeah, he actually says that. And he also says, I don't know who made the golden rule that love and sex had to go together, because I've enjoyed love without sex and sex without love.
Emphasis on the latter.
Yeah, the former's kind of interesting, isn't it? Not what you'd expect. But
right.
And then he says, the more relationships you have, the more you learn about other people. When you actually are in love with somebody, you tend to be jealous and want to own them and possess them 100%, which I do. The danger is that you want to possess them to death.
I get that he, given his psycho history of abandonment.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so many people that he loved, you know, even through death, leaving him.
Mm.
And there's certainly a great pattern there.
Yeah.
That he would have this latent possessiveness. I don't know how much he ever manifested that with Cynthia.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this was at the time, don't forget, 71, when, you know, he'd written the lyrics, you know, Jealous Guy, okay? Which,
yeah,
again, is all about the vulnerability and the jealousy, the pure possessiveness.
Yeah, and his lashing out and hurting the object of his affection.
Right.
Although, you know, I think a lot of people, if they really think about it, you know, who would he have been jealous of during his relationship with Yoko? You know, who posed a threat to him?
It seems like everyone, because the very fact, I mean, when I first heard that or read that, he was worried that Paul, you know, during the Get Back sessions or White Album, whatever, was Paul was going to be hitting on Yoko, and so John would follow her to the bathroom, to the toilet.
Yes.
I mean, I was just stunned. I was like, really? You really think Paul would have hit on Yoko? Maybe he would have done, just to get one up on him.
Well,
don't know.
That might have been his fear, but you also have to question whether there was a there.
Right.
Meaning, yeah, going back to 1966,
yeah,
and there are so many accounts that Paul was the first Beatle approached by Yoko.
Mm-hmm.
He would have had the highest profile, living in London proper, being connected to the Indica Gallery. You know, we absolutely know, I mean, from Paul's own mouth.
Unmarried.
Yeah, unmarried, and you know, projecting that, you know, sexual kineticism,
yeah,
if you will,
mm,
that, you know, anything at all with a pulse and a fill
and
in the blank, yeah, would be fair game.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether Yoko felt that vibe from him or not, there's at least one McCartney book that strongly suggests they had at least one encounter.
Mm.
Until there's further evidence of that, I'm not going to necessarily, you know, embrace that,
right,
completely. But if John was feeling particularly insecure about Yoko with Paul, there may be some smoke and fire to go along with,
yeah,
that, that,
yeah,
we don't know about yet.
Right. I mean, you know, there was a wonderful documentary done quite a few years ago back in the UK called The Real John Lennon. And Cynthia is largely featured in that one-hour special, I think it is. And she goes back to Liverpool and revisits the art college and Mendips and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And she relates a story, as does one of her friends, female friends from the time, about, you know, John getting jealous and hitting her.
Yes. I do get it in that day that he might have been a lot more possessive and jealous of, you know, because of the proximity to other potential, you know, sexual threats,
yes,
to him and Cynthia.
Yeah.
But by the time he's writing Beatle material, 64, 65, I'm not even sure he looked at her very sexually at that
maybe
point.
Maybe not, but he's living with that kind of feeling, mate. Maybe, even if it's not for her, but he's just this insecure guy.
He is. And I think anything that posed a threat to taking a loved one away from him,
yeah,
would have absolutely sent him into a spiral.
Also,
of
the male ego
despair
coming out there, that, you know, I'm going to be top dog and no one's going to, you know. tread on my patch. I mean, and you can't do that, right? So that's 1964, beginning of 64 on the Hard Day's Night album. And he said, I've got something to say that might cause you pain. I mean,
right there is an implicit threat.
Absolutely, because he's then going to lead into, if I catch you talking to that boy again, I'm going to let you down and leave you flat. That is like, you know, if you like play around on me. But as you say, he opens with a real threat. I'm going to cause you pain.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to think that people just looked past the lyrics and did not interpret them literally in that day.
Right.
But we look at them now, and knowing what we know of John's psychohistory and, you know, backstory, as it were, all that sort of stuff, we can read a hell of a lot more into it that's going to resonate with
us.
And just the threat of violence that he opens the song with.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge.
So now, okay, we've been talking a lot about John here, but what about Paul? You know, a song that comes to mind for me, which is not one that we normally sort of focus on much, is Another Girl on, you know, the Help album.
Yeah.
And he says, I don't want to say that I've been unhappy with you, but as from today, well, I've seen somebody that's new. I ain't no fool, and I don't take what I don't want. So he's basically just ditching her for someone better.
Well, he's giving her warning. He's saying, you know, on the one hand...
Is he giving a warning? I thought it's a fait accompli at this point. He's moving on. He's saying he's moving on.
I don't take what I don't want.
Right.
So it's like he's giving this heads up that, you know, you're giving me something I don't want, and guess what? I've got another girl as if waiting in the wings. He's not saying he's leaving.
Right.
You know, he's extolling her, you know, through thick and thin, she will always be my friend.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
That's very nice of him.
Yeah. With benefits, apparently.
Yeah.
But he's being careful. He's like, you know, spinning this, I don't want to say I've been unhappy with you.
Yeah.
But I don't take what I don't get, I want.
And again, referring back to what we said before, it's not like this is indicative of a big-time misogynist because of one song with a lyric that's not exactly overt, you know. It's pretty sort of subtle.
It's a warning.
But it is, and I do think it truly does reflect an attitude.
Yes.
He certainly was in a position to behave like that in 65, and he was behaving like that.
He absolutely was. And it's funny because, you know, if you look at some of the McCartney songs, you know, early on, and I'm thinking maybe these were based in some sort of reality for him, he's got these songs of romantic distance. You know, P.S. I Love You, he's writing a letter, you know, I'll be home soon. Mm. He's away someplace, some undisclosed location. Mm-hmm. You know, could have been writing to his girlfriends in Liverpool when he was in Hamburg.
Yeah.
Perhaps that was what prompted it. All My Loving, again, another letter song. I'll be home, but while I'm away, I'll write home every day. John similarly writes, It Won't Be Long, which is another song. Only
absolutely.
It's the girl that's coming home.
Absolutely.
You're coming home.
Yes.
Which is funny when you look at, you know, John and Paul side by side. It's like two sides of the same relationship.
Yeah.
Wait is another great song, largely by Paul, ended up on Rubber Soul. I've been good as I can be.
Yes.
He gives himself an out there.
Yeah.
As good as I can be.
Yeah. Again, these are things that would have just flown straight past the ears of most listeners.
Oh, yeah. You're just going for the overall sound.
But I don't think it's overanalyzing to pick up on it now.
No, I don't at all.
Yeah.
It's just very interesting to me that it's almost like a tacit acknowledgement that, yes, I'm away, and I might not be all the things you want me to be, but things will be great when I'm home.
Mm-hmm.
Lucky you.
Yeah, yeah. Right. It's you know, another thing is also a term of affection. I think it was used as a term of affection, but again, there's a kind of, you know, a chauvinism to the title Little Child.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's not meant to be a little child. It's obviously a woman of sufficient age to be in a relationship with him. Well, and he's referring to her as little child, which is, again, you know, people say baby or
patronizing.
You know, yeah. But it is.
It's an endearment.
Sort of, yeah.
I wouldn't read too deeply into it. You know, of course, Little Girl pops up.
Well, I was going to say, then you get to, like, Run for Your Life, which is an absolute put-down song, and you've got all these lines ending with Little Girl.
Yes.
Right? You know, warning the little girl. I mean, it's a real put-down. It's sticking her in her place.
Well, speaking of Little Child, you just reminded me of something. How often John used the expression run and hide?
Yeah.
I mean, over and over again, and I'm reading to that. Let's think about this for a second. Mm. You know, he does it in Little Child, Don't You Run and Hide. If I Fell, he uses it.
Yes.
Run and Hide.
Yep.
Rain, he uses it.
Yep.
Run and Hide and Run for Your Life, run and then hide in the following line.
Yes.
So think about that. It's almost like there's this expectation that somebody's going to flee him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Although, does he not also have the feeling at times that he wants to run and hide, most likely?
Well, doesn't he hide himself away and you've got to hide your love away?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. So it's very interesting, isn't it?
It is. You know, there's layers upon
about security.
Layers. Yeah.
And the lack of it.
Right. Absolutely. Again, you know, let's get to getting better because you alluded to it before.
Yes.
What, you know, a verse where he says, I used to be cruel to my woman. I beat her and kept her apart from the things that she loved. Man, I was mean, but I'm changing my scene and I'm doing the best that I can. Remarkable.
Yeah.
Absolutely remarkable. There's no mistaking, you know, what he's referring to.
It's a mea culpa.
Yeah.
I was bad, but please, I'm trying to get better. I'm working through this.
Right.
You know, forgive me in advance for my transgression. It's getting better all the time. I used to get mad at my school. No, I can't complain. The teachers that taught me weren't cool. No, I can't complain. They're holding me down, turning me round, filling me up with your rule. I've got to admit, it's getting better. It's a little better all the time. I can't get no worse. I have to admit, it's getting better.
See maybe a hypocrisy in that, but it's still a remarkable thing for a mainstream artist just coming off Beatlemania and to be, you know, putting that into that number. I still think that takes balls.
Yeah, and it's within the context of a song where, you know, the whole thing, the hook is getting better.
Yes.
Things are improving.
Yeah,
I'm striving here.
Yeah,
you know, I used to be an angry young man. Mm. You know, he does the thing about school.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's like everything he knows that he should deal with better, he's improving. He's distancing himself from his former behavior.
Yeah. I mean, there is an honesty that comes through, and I don't think it's unwitting. I think, you know, in a lot of Lennon's songs, there's an honesty. We referred to it before, you know, with If I Fell, which you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of juxtapose that with McCartney's song on the same Hard Day's Night album,
And
I Love Her, which is a fantastic song. You know, there's nothing I can say against that song. It's a beautiful song. And I'm sure millions and millions of women would love to have a love song written about them, you know, like that. But that said, again, there's a distance from Paul. It's a pretty song. He's putting the woman kind of on a pedestal.
He's objectifying.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He is. Whereas with John, you've got the insecurity in it.
It's much more direct.
It is. And it's much more from the heart, and you're getting closer to the songwriter.
He's revealing that vulnerability.
Yeah.
But there's another way. If you read the literal, you know, the lyrics as written, you know, it could be that this new love he's aspiring to is somebody that's bi or a lesbian. If you look at the words, I must be sure from the very start that you would love me more than her.
Whoa, you're flipping it there. I've heard it that way. It's not the first time that that's occurred to
me.
Right,
but think about that.
Yeah, you love me more than her. Yeah.
And further on, that same year, No Reply. A stalker anthem, if ever was.
Oh, God, yes, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. And I get the whole thing was inspired by Silhouettes.
Yeah.
Another stalker anthem.
Yes.
You know, where he's you know, checking out this woman's residence when he's not supposed to be there and see what she's up to. But
and there's a long tradition of that in song, by the way, in popular song.
I'm not knocking for it.
You know, where the guy is presenting it as, you know, he just loves this woman and can't get her out of his head. But he's often, as you said, stalking her in the song.
It's like as recently the 90s comes to mind. Gin Blossoms found out about you.
Yeah.
He was driving past her house. He's watching the lights go out.
Right.
You know, so that tradition is alive and well.
Well, my daughter Melanie pointed out to me in, was it 1940s song by George Formby, Leaning on a Lamppost?
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, waiting for the little lady to come by, oh me, oh my. And it ends up that she's kind of running away from him, it turns out, in the song. He's like completely stalking her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a tradition in popular song.
Yeah.
But there's the other line in... you know, in No Reply.
Yeah.
If I were you in the bridge, I'd realize that I'd love you more than any other guy.
Yeah.
Did he write this in Spain?
Oh, seriously. Yeah. But again, I have to be honest. I think there's a possibility, but my guess is it wasn't meant as a double meaning. That's my
one never knows. And I give him all the credit in the world for being very aware of his word choices.
When you want him to be. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have stalking there. I mean, there's also general tackiness that pops up.
Mm.
Yes, it is. Beautiful, sweet, romantic song.
Yes.
Exquisite harmonies.
Yes.
I love, again, the vulnerability he projects. And we've talked about this in the London Vocal Show. But you look at the lyrical content. You know, don't wear red because it reminds me of a past love.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Don't. Yeah. Just don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then in the whole bridge, the it's my pride.
Mm-hmm.
What he's proud that he had this love that he no longer does. And
you
don't wound him by reminding him that he doesn't have it anymore.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, it brings me back to that line that I quoted before from the 1971 interview where he says, the more relationships you have, the more you learn about other people. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing they certainly brought a wealth of experience. Even by 1962, right, you know, the songs they were writing, they brought... comparatively, you know, a wealth of experience.
They're very worldly. So,
yeah.
I mean, my God, you know, growing, coming up sexual age in Hamburg,
right,
of all places.
Right.
You know, and then going back to provincial Liverpool by comparison.
Yeah.
Yeah, my God, they would have been quite worldly.
Now, we haven't spoken much about George at this point because he, you know, George, Mr. Yin and Yang, you know, so a man of opposites.
Yes. Ambiguity.
Yes.
If you have to put your finger on a single word summing up the subtext of his early material. You know, he's got songs that are ostensibly about a love interest that most of the time are conveying disapproval.
Yeah.
You know, don't bother me.
Yes.
You like me too much.
Yes.
Think for yourself.
Yeah.
If I needed someone.
Yeah. And it's funny. Yeah, that's right. That's really interesting because you're right. Those titles kind of run contrary to the sentiment that you pick up in the songs themselves.
Right.
Where he seems to be, you know, in love with the girl or he's certainly interested. And yet these titles go against that.
That's what he's putting out there.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting to me because, you know, yes, he had to grow up in public, as it were, with his songwriting, his craft.
Mm.
And, you know, when he throws in words like and really so often,
yes,
they're kind of like placeholders,
right,
so things will scan well.
Right.
You can forgive him that, and you can forgive some of the, you know, naivety of some of these songs. You Like Me Too Much is a very odd lyric.
Well, amongst quite a few odd George lyrics of the era.
Yeah, first of all, from the onset, you've gone away this morning, but you'll be back again tonight.
Yes.
So he's sort of condescending, like, you know, clearly I've done something to displease you that's making you go away.
But I know you'll be back.
You'll be back, yeah. So there's kind of an arrogance, a McCartney-esque arrogance there.
Yes. Which, in truth, they all had. They all
Sure. You had to.
Yeah. Just McCartney made, you know, a sort of made his trademark.
Right. Telling me there'll be no next time.
Right.
If I just don't treat you right.
Yeah.
But you'll never leave me, and you know it's true. Because you like me too much.
But you see,
like you.
Again, we're doing it in that sort of negative vein. It can be said in a charming way as well, right?
Sure.
You know, where you're teasing someone, you're saying, come on, you like me too much. You're going to come back.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be so negative.
Well, what's refreshing is he cops to his ill treatment.
Yeah.
Which is all that I deserve.
Yes.
So there's a bit of self-awareness there.
Yeah. And I'm sure that ran right through his personal life. All the way to the end.
Well, yeah, more and more vividly as time went on. What was Olivia's line? George liked women.
Yeah, that's right. And Paul's line was, well, he was a red-blooded male, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Message received.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, with George, though, the thing that amuses me is what's known as possibly one of George's greatest, most famous love songs?
Something.
Right. And there we have the video, you know, made in 69 where they're all filmed separately and each with their wives,
love interest,
and partners. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And George, though, regardless of that video, the song is not even about his wife.
Well, right. It was not inspired.
No.
Right. There's two stories that we discussed in the Myth Show. Yeah. One, he was envisioning Ray Charles every inch of the way as he was composing the song.
Well, yeah, I think you need to clarify that.
Not as a love interest, but as a sonic,
right.
You know, fulfilling of this lick,
yeah.
Which is how it started out.
Yeah.
And he struggled for a long time. I mean, if he was writing a straight-up song about Patty,
yeah.
You know, I don't think he'd be dummying it with lines like, attracts me like a pomegranate.
Right. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, that's true.
It would have written itself.
Yes.
But you know, she ran with it, and he might have even said at one time, yeah, it's about you, whatever. Just as you do. But I don't think it was sincere.
When he fancied a bit, most likely he was saying, oh, yeah, that song's about you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I always, people, you know, there are people that critique Beatle lyrics and, you know, something, you know, just this, you know, top-notch standard, great song, but has that chorus, you know, I believe and how.
Yeah.
People that, to me, I get it. I think that's a fine line.
Yes, it
but
is.
I get where people would think, oh, God, you know, it's so cringy.
Well, like a cow's come home line for you.
Kind of, yeah. Except I'm okay with that one. And how. I get what he's saying. You know?
Yeah.
Boy, howdy.
But what about their personal evolution? Because, you know, for me, the one who evolves the most during those years in terms of his attitude towards women.
Wait for it.
Well, it is John. But it's not. I'm not just saying it's because of how remarkable he was that he did that. It's also because of who he got involved with and, you know, this different kind of a woman, right? You know, she's not a girl who misses much. As he said, you know,
different kind of woman, all right.
That's for sure. And Happiness is a Warm Gun, right? And although that song is overtly sexual, he's well aware that he's more than met his match. That's really what's coming through in that song.
Yeah, there's so much imagery flying around in that song.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like a kaleidoscope of stuff that hangs together very well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
you know, she's well acquainted. You know, this woman's got experience.
Yeah,
she's worldly. Yeah, she's worldly. She can look after herself. And it also comes over as if she's teaching him things. That's what I pick up.
And that's the thing that he would run with forever after.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like it's a Playboy interview and, you know, calling her Don Juan.
Yeah.
Not in the romantic, you know, conquest sense,
right.
But the teacher sense.
Yeah, but if you, you know, think of what we've been discussing about Lennon in song and all the misogyny.
Yeah.
Now, you know, let's fast forward a little bit more to Don't Let Me Down. Mm-hmm. Apart from the delightful line, I'm in love for the first time, which I've had a problem with that,
yes.
As I said, in the context of poor old Cynthia.
Right, especially when it goes, it's a love that has no past.
Right.
Believe me.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so I just...
Twist of the knife.
Yeah, totally. I find it pretty crass, I have to say. But also, by now, the woman, in this case Yoko, has him in her grips. He's put everything on the line for her. And again, his insecurity is rampant, right? Yeah. Don't let me down.
Yeah, don't hurt me. Yeah. Yes. And he's expressed romantic hurt, you know, from day one. Mm. You look at Not a Second Time.
Yes.
You hurt me then. You're back again.
Yeah.
Oh, this time I'm not going to let you.
Right.
Fantastic song.
Yes.
Great arrangement, great tune. Yeah. I mean, great performance, every level. And that's, again, you know, Lennon projecting vulnerability.
Yeah.
Less explicitly vulnerable, but still sort of the same theme. Tell me why.
Yes.
Tell me why you lied.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. You know, and he, it's a well he would return to from time to time.
Well, I don't want to spoil the party.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, he's hurt that she is left.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and then again, you know, I want you, she's so heavy. I mean, really simple lyrics, but what do they convey? He's sexually obsessed and it's driving him nuts.
Yes.
You know, so in other words, at this point, he's kind of ceded power to the woman in many ways. That's what's coming over.
Oh, yeah.
He's presenting it as being madly in love, which he is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's fine to say, well, I'm just totally, you know, she's turned my head around. She occupies all my thoughts. But this is coming from the guy who was completely in control, supposedly, apart from these allusions to a woman leaving him and being insecure.
Yeah, hurting him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. You look at a song like You're Gonna Lose That Girl.
Yes. I mean,
complete objectifying, you know, if you don't treat her right, I'm just going to take her from you.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, George could have sung that to Ringo a few years later.
Yeah? You're going to lose that, Mo.
but what about Paul? Do you see misogyny in Maxwell's Silver Hammer? And I'm not kidding about that.
Well, again, it's another murder ballad.
It's serial killer, and he's killing all these women.
I get that he's being cute. You know, it's meant to be.
Of course it is.
You know, perverse.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's funny about it is that the first two verses he knocks off two women.
Right.
You know, and then at the end. He gets the judge.
Yes.
But
A male judge.
The male judge, yeah. But what's funny is Rose and Valerie screaming from the gallery.
Yeah. So
how many times
free.
In life have you seen murderers on trial that women are sending him roses and proposing to him and all that stuff?
Right.
Totally rings true.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
It's actually a very insightful device he put in there.
Now, what about Ringo? Not that we got many Ringo lyrics during the Beatle years.
What goes on, Ringo?
Yeah, but I've always suspected that those aren't all his lyrics, you know.
Supposedly for the credit he got, he, you know, whatever input he had, he tweaked something. But again, you know, he's got this two-timing woman.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Did you mean to break my heart and watch me die?
Yeah. Ringo, I don't know about you, but he's one I know the least about in terms of his relationships with women during that
sexual
era.
Sexual conquests?
Right. I mean, you know, we know about him in the 70s once he's, you know, free of Mo. But back in the 60s, you know, we hear a lot about, you know, George philandering and Paul and John, but not really anything about Ringo.
You don't hear about it.
No.
Well, I take that back. I mean, Chris O'Dell.
Yeah.
I mean, that might have occurred. I'm not sure how much into the breakup of Mo and Ringo that was that occurred.
Right.
Listeners who have read her book will know.
Yeah. But as I said, I'm talking about in the 60s.
In the 60s,
when they're on the road,
tour.
I mean, who knows what went on, but we don't, nothing has actually come to light about that.
No, it's funny. Like when I think of Ringo on the road anecdotes, I think of when they were in Indianapolis and you know, he went out for a joyride. Parading, as it were, and nobody knew where the hell he was to go around the racetrack with some local cops or something.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, it's like he's living the Beatle cartoon at that point.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, when it comes to Paul, we know that a lot of his, especially his nastier songs, were informed by his relationship with Jane Asher, a strong-willed woman who would not put up with his crap.
I'm looking through you.
Yeah, I'm looking through you. You won't see me.
Mm-hmm.
There's been suggestion that for no one. You know, which is, again,
one of his finest lyrics.
One of his finest everything.
Yeah.
And again, the amount of detail in there, it's just stunning.
Yeah.
You know, she wakes up, she makes up, she takes her time.
It's beautiful.
It's fantastic.
It is. It's, you know, he's economical with the words. He never gets too gushy or syrupy or anything. It's a wonderful song. It's very touching.
Yeah, it is. And just making the point that when he's doing his romantic stuff, he doesn't nearly get into that level of detail.
No.
No. I mean, he's a lot more general, and he's very idealized.
Yes.
You know, I mean, you don't get the sense that true love is anything he's experienced to that point in the Beatles.
Right.
I mean, he would get, you know, to the point of, you know, people considering being soppy with the songs that clearly he wrote about Linda. during the post-Beatles years.
Yeah.
But that ring absolutely true, like a Maybe I'm Amazed.
Yeah.
You know, that you could tell he's singing from his gut. When he sings about romantic love in the 60s and the Beatles, you don't get that same sense.
You do wonder why, you know, these people who got, like, you know, these guys who got women just falling at their feet and...
have had every possible sexual fulfillment
right.
done.
And they certainly intend to keep playing the field, you yes. know. Why even get together with someone, you know, on the basis of, you know, being engaged or right. married or why even bother with
social
that?
Pressures?
Yeah, I don't know.
McCartney was very, very close to his family. But I think he really enjoyed doing family events and needed that girlfriend.
But does it also speak to a romanticism for all of the, you know, sexual exploitation and the misogyny, whatever you want to label it?
Yeah.
Does it also speak to that human need of also just having a partner and having
sure.
that romance?
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. And yeah. They all clearly wanted that.
Yeah.
No matter how less than seriously they might have treated fidelity in their relationships, I think they really, you know, John loved people. He's very social in
yeah.
those years.
Yeah.
Loved having somebody that, you know, Cynthia was an art student.
Mm.
She was no dummy.
Right.
She had artistic aspirations of her own.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that in another show. But,
yeah.
you know, he couldn't have been with somebody that was a nobody.
Yes.
And Paul, you know, he definitely was a social climber.
Uh-huh.
And here he has this accomplished actress from a great family of achievers.
Absolutely. A doctor on Harley Street in London, the most famous street in London for doctors.
Yeah.
Society doctors.
It was an acting background, and they were involved in music. They were extremely cultured.
Yeah.
You know, and he, quite frankly, liked the idea of having arm candy.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, he would keep his side affairs out of the public light, but, you know, Jane was absolutely somebody to show up.
Well, actually, if you think about it, in terms of Lennon's second marriage, you know, McCartney's first marriage, they married up.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. You know, in terms of the backgrounds, you know, Yoko came from a very wealthy family.
Right, in terms of background,
did,
sure.
Right?
Right?
You know, and as you say, Paul with Jane Asher, mm-hmm. you know, aspiring upwards.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not that I think John was marrying Yoko to social climb, that's mm-hmm. for sure.
No. No, that was a whole different thing. But yeah. Ringo married on his level.
Yes, he did.
With Mo.
Yep.
Which is not a put down.
No.
And I think he found comfort in that.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
George married a fashion model, a very successful one who'd been on TV.
Someone who reminded him of Brigitte Bardot, who he and John had been obsessed with in
sure.
the 50s.
Yeah. So you absolutely see. And Patty, I think, was smarter than most of the public gave her credit for.
Mm.
I mean, she was the one that turned him on to TM and all that Eastern stuff.
Right.
So she was a seeker.
Yeah.
To the extent that George would allow her to be.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, we are going to be doing shows, just to clarify, you know, upcoming shows on these fundamental relationships, like, you know, Paul and Jane and
yeah.
John and Cynthia and so on and so forth. So we will
yeah.
be focusing on those.
They don't want to get too enmeshed in direct references and songs
right.
to specific women.
But I before was sort of, you know, alluding to how John evolved during the Beatle years, even, you know,
yeah.
how his attitude towards women evolved, at least in song and,
yes.
and certainly in his own private life. Now, how do you see that with the others in terms of, do you see a similar sort of involvement with George or with Paul?
I would say with Paul, if you read, you know, and again, divorcing the lyrics from the music, you know, We Can Work It Out is as fine a single as they ever did.
Love it.
A great, great track.
Yeah.
The lyrics are horrible. You know, it's basically...
What do you mean, bad lyrics?
I'm, in terms of what he's putting out
oh,
there...
Oh, the sentiment.
Yeah, yeah, see things my way or else.
Yeah,
you know,
yes.
That's his definition of compromise.
Well, it was within the Beatles sometimes as well.
Well, right, but it's so Paul.
Mm.
You know, our love may soon be gone. Think of what you're saying. You can get it wrong.
Yeah.
See, you know, think of what I'm saying. We
yeah.
can work it out or say goodnight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only time will tell if I'm right or I'm wrong. Well, he's pretty certain that he's right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. It is true. It's quite amusing, actually, when you see it in that light, you know, that it is. It's, you know, working it out is seeing it his way.
It absolutely is. So, and that's just, you know, you can look at other lyrics, too. I'm looking through you.
Yeah.
You know, you're not the same. You've changed.
Yeah.
You've changed, so we're done here.
It's also a very challenging thing to say to someone, I'm looking through you. You know, I can see right through you. I know
yeah.
your game. You know, I know what's going on. I may know more about you than you do.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very challenging.
Yeah. It's in a way sort of patronizing.
Right.
But you have this awakening, I think, in their songcraft.
Yeah.
You know, by the time they're done with the touring years, you know, 67, he's clearly reaching beyond just writing straight up love songs.
Yes.
Yet by the time, you know, he does return to that wellspring, I look at his sort of parallel. You know, John makes the case that, well, I was looking for this idealization of the perfect woman when I wrote Girl.
Girl, yeah.
You know, you can, in a way, see when Paul writes something as ostensibly romantically sweet as I Will, it's still an aspirational song.
Yeah.
And when at last I find you, this song will fill the air.
Yeah.
And you look at 1968, you know, he starts out the year with Jane and goes through Jane, Francie Schwartz, before settling on Linda. Yeah. I mean, she'd been going back some time. So he's got other women, but I think those were the three that were under any kind of serious consideration.
Well, not to forget, you know, what Peter Brown alluded to as the black and white minstrel show in Hollywood Hills.
The little side dish. To the extent
dishes.
That we believe Peter Brown.
Yeah.
But yeah, he ultimately ended, by the time he wrote I Will, I don't think he'd actually settled on Linda.
Right.
But, you know, he was working his way toward that, what he wanted out of life. And certainly by the time the White Album came out, that was it. They had set their course.
Why don't we play out with that number?
Yeah, it's very interesting because it's a sweet song, but it's also, like I say, aspirational. You know, like the Turtles Happy Together.
Yes.
The first word of that lyric is key to the whole song. Imagine. It's not, we are a done deal. I'm just envisioning that we could
I know
be.
Another song that starts with that word.
Do you?
Yeah.
A Lennon Ono song, no doubt.
Do you realize that the Beatles' first single started, the title of the single started with the word love?
Yes.
And their last official kind of new release ended with the word love.
Love
Me Do to Real Love.
Sure.
And that kind of summarizes.
Bookends love. The whole thing,
yeah,
doesn't
it? It does. Yeah.
Yeah. Another way of looking at it prior to Anthology was, you know, their last single in the States was The Long and Winding Road.
Uh-huh.
And what does that song end with? Yeah, 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 yeah.
Fantastic. Uh-huh. You know, as we play it out, just as a little aside for people who don't know already, listen to the bass line. It's not actually played on bass guitar. It's Paul singing it. It's a cappella.
I wish we had an isolation of that.
It'd be wonderful, wouldn't it? But anyway, let's take a listen to that. And say thanks for listening to the show. This is Richard Buskin.
And this is Robert Rodriguez.
And this has been
Something
About the Beatles.
Who knows how long I've loved you? You know I love you still. Will I wait a lonely lifetime? If you want me to, I will. For if I ever saw
The Beatles, recorded at Strad Studios, produced by Thomas Rapetney. Executive producer, Rick Way. Title song recorded by the Corgis.
The regular season is heating up, new stars are emerging, and that means more opportunities to win up to 25 times your cash on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection on a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's that easy. Let It Fly to turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Watch your favorite players and get paid doing it this basketball season. See your entries make progress during the game or make new entries for the second half in the fourth quarter. Three-pointers, assists, rebounds, and everything in between are yours for the taking. Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit of up to $100. Just download the Prize Picks app and use code GET100. That's code GET100 on Prize Picks for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.